You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This town. We got to play Dionne Warwick. That's what friends are for more, I think.
Think so, in this town.
Now that we're, me and her, the show and the Psychic Friends Network are not at war anymore. So, first hour, Wake Up, brought to you by Cabco AZ, Central Arizona Block. Three great locations over at Wetmore, Valencia by the Airspace Museum in Sierra Vista.
Yes, sir. Oh, I wanted to say the Sierra Vista
line. All right, let's do it again. Wetmore, Valencia by the Airspace Museum. What's that third one?
Sierra Vista.
Oh, wow.
Down by Fort Huachuca.
Thanks, Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You're the man.
Thank you.
We're going to get to Tim Bowen running for Oro Valley Council in just a bit. Got to do a few things. I want to make a correction. Ramon Valadez has been there for 18 years.
Okay. Just feels like 20.
Yes.
Yeah.
Feels like 94 years. But he, when Ekstrom stepped down in 2002, he was appointed.
He was appointed, and then he did. That's how they do it.
Then another listener said to you, and thanks to Barney for the 2002, and then PC, if Pima County passes whatever they do today, does that still conflict with the governor's thing?
Right.
Yes.
So then what?
Then they're going to take it to court.
And then they're going to spend my money on taking it to court.
Of course.
Because they made up their own stuff.
Again, another thing that's missing in all these stories is Regina Nassen, the Pima County attorney, saying that she had not thoroughly read any of the governor's stuff.
I can't believe that. Okay, you mentioned it again. We've been mentioning it for 2 weeks now. Nobody else mentions it. Five pages, you told me. I didn't know that. I thought it was like a big thing. Five pages, she never, from the governor. She's the Pima County attorney. She never read it.
No.
She didn't read it when she made her comments.
Right.
This is ridiculous.
Not just making her comment, giving advice to voting members of the board.
This is how they run Pima County.
Now, on the chamber thing, I said, imagine if Amber said, but I know Guyman talked, vice president. I have it. I'm going to watch it at the next break.
Okay.
And I'm going to find out what he said exactly, and then we'll go from there. We got to go to the phones, 790-2040. On the Ed Alexander Live line, we have Tim Bowen. He's running for Oro Valley Town Council. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be on the show.
So, Tim Bowen, as we like to say for people running for the first time, who are you and why are you putting your family and yourself through the election process? Let's start off right off the bat.
Chris, I'm an engineer who moved out to Oro Valley to take a new job opportunity, and I've loved living in Oro Valley. It's the best place that I've ever lived. I'm pleasantly surprised by what a great opportunity this has been for us. And the reason why I'm running for town council, even though I've been here a few years, I've been very active in our local politics. And what I've seen is that we residents, we simply can't stand on the sidelines any longer. It's very clear to us that outside money, raw land speculators, and their allies, they're attempting to have far too great of an influence on our local politics. And if residents don't stand up and run for office, we deserve what we get. And that's why I've chosen to run. And I hope that other people will see my campaign as, a motivation for them and a possibility that, yes, residents who didn't plan to be in politics simply need to get out there and run for these council seats.
So we know a lot of these rezonings were going down under the Satish world. What about the last 2 years of this council in that world, if that's something that bothers you? What's one or two things that bothers you in particular?
Regarding the last 2 years,
yes,
in particular, Chris, I would say there's been, in my opinion, a lack of acceptance on the part of the minority council members, the three that are currently in the minority, that Oro Valley's really decided to take a new direction. And we can see that from the vote on 454 and from the 2018 election. In both cases, the incumbents were comprehensively defeated. I think that was a clear message that the town wants to go in a different direction. But if somebody's attending the meetings regularly and watching the proceedings, from the room itself, what I'm seeing is sort of a sullen petulance on the part of the three that remain failure to, you know, cooperate, reach out, and really consider that maybe, you know, the town in which they won their election in 2016, it's really changing, and this new direction, maybe consider getting on board or moving on.
What do you think? What do you think the number one reason Satish and the other three were defeated so soundly? What, in your opinion, why do you think that change happened?
I think, you know, it's often popularly attributed to golf, but in my view, what really cost them their jobs is they made agreements with outside interests that were really bad for the town. And, you know, golf is a great shorthand for describing that when considering, you know, the conquistador course experience. But fundamentally, what I see and what I hear is that people here, they're tired of not being heard. You know, they can feel like the 2016 election was effectively bought by these challengers. There were no, you know, there's no evidence that I can see of a lot of individual contributions to Solomon and Rodman. All the contributions came in from, you know, places like that you know well of, from HSL, from Jim Click, Thai family, you know, people like that, people who have a vested interest in maximizing the value of raw land that remains in Oral Valley for the profits of the speculators. So I sense it was a frustration. And we talk about golf because golf is how it manifests itself, but it's really who controls the future direction of Oral Valley? Is it inside interests like we residents or outside interests?
Tell me about, so you brought up the golf course. What should happen with the golf course? What should have happened? Were you happy with the decisions? Because a lot of us who helped Joe and the three get elected are currently pissed off that golf course thing went down the way it did. So where are you at?
I'm very unhappy with the way that it happened. The meeting in which the approval of the purchase was made, it's available for everyone to read. Or excuse me, I'm sorry, a little nervous, everyone to watch. And what you can see there in that meeting, Chris, is that you can see there are many concerned residents that come up and they say, we need to ask this question, this question, this question. We're not saying that you shouldn't make this purchase, but we clearly at this point, we lack the data in order to ensure that this is a good decision for us. And why on earth are we letting the timetable for this acquisition be determined by HSL? How do we get into a position where we literally have to decide tonight without due diligence? Like I said, please go back and watch that video. I think the questions that Bill Garner asked and Mike Zinkin and Brendan Burns asked were exactly the right questions to ask. They're like, we're not saying don't do it, but we're not ready. And yet, you know, the thing got gaveled through 4-3. Just had to be done because Mayor Heyer Math said I had given my word that we would resolve this tonight. So all in all, I was very frustrated with that decision. And I think in retrospect, it's turned out to be a very poor decision for our town.
We're talking to Tim Bone. He's running for Oral Valley Town Council. Early ballots are going to go out somewhere around the 9th or the 10th of July for these races. Go to Bowen, B-O-H-E-N, number4OV.com to find out more about his campaign. So I think one of the big questions in Oral Valley right now is, especially with what's going on in the weirdness of retail and restaurants and things like this, we are a sales tax-driven economy here in Oral Valley. Like a lot of municipalities, we have a Oral Valley marketplace that's just keeps getting emptier and emptier as time moves on. And I have a planning and a economic development director who thinks 180 acres of tech park need to be only for tech park. So where are we at? Is this a property tax in the future if Tim Bowen's elected? How do we actually truly maximize the sales tax collection so we don't have to stare a property tax down the throat?
Chris, thanks for that question. A little bit of history on Oral Valley. Oral Valley was founded in 1974. And during the 1990s, Oral Valley was the fastest growing city in Arizona for several years. During that time, since 1974, we've only had a sales tax. And yet, for those 45 years that we've existed, we've managed to have a financially healthy town. For me, it's a false choice to say, you know, between a sales tax and a property tax. We can run Oral Valley in a very satisfactory way on sales taxes. The issue for me is how do we suspend the sales taxes. Absolutely, the priority of town council should be to watch our sales tax revenues very closely, monitor, project, and figure out what our town can provide based upon sales tax revenue. I do not think we need a property tax. And in going back through the history, I think, you know, it's shown conclusively that this town can fund its operation on sales taxes. And these sales taxes are constantly increasing.
What do you think? What do you think of the new development plan on Oro Valley Marketplace provided by Mr. Horvath and the crew?
I disagree with it. I spoke against it. To me, it's sort of a flailing and desperate effort to maximize current retail by, you know, for those people that aren't familiar with it, there are plans to add hotels at both ends of the marketplace and inside of the hotels, between the hotels and the Walmart apartments. You know, fundamentally, we're trying to create a new residential area there that's, you know, right on top of the retail. And of course, that will give some benefit to the marketplace and it will fill some of the stores. But Chris, we also have to remember every benefit comes at a cost. And the additional traffic from that on our fixed road network, we don't know what that's going to be like. We don't know what the impact on police services is going to be like. Consistently, we see, you know, people from the outside coming in to rescue us because we're going to provide you with more revenue if you give us additional entitlements. However, with that revenue always comes the responsibilities. And I don't see the new responsibilities being well analyzed yet based upon the new proposal for the marketplace.
So what would you do with them? Just let the market decide whatever the marketplace does and let it basically die? Is that your thing?
It doesn't die, Chris. It basically operates at the level that it operates at based upon the residential population around it. I don't know if you've been to the Oro Valley marketplace during COVID-19, but it's during the day, it seems to be doing very well right now. It's much more crowded than at any other time since I've lived here.
Well, at Walmart and In-N-Out Burger, but
yes.
No one's going to Best Buy. No one's going to a movie theater. No one's going to the restaurants in there. Yes. Charred pizza's totally been shut down for the last 45 days. So
yes, but
I don't know what you're
that's
saying.
Not in the control. That's not in within the control of the Oro Valley Town Council. We simply can't make people shop. Basically, people are consuming what they need to consume. Chris, I would push back at you, and I'd say what you can see if you drive around Oro Valley is vastly overbuilt retail. You have empty retail everywhere. It's not a unique problem in the Oro Valley marketplace. The crystal ball that developers used 15 and 20 years ago was just not accurate. The retail infrastructure is overbuilt in our town, in my view.
Tim, I got a break. Hold on for one more quick segment, okay?
Sure.
We got Tim Bowen. He's running for Oro Valley Town Council. Bowen, B-O-H-E-N, number 4OV.com. Wake up. Happy birthday to Leo Sayre, reporter at the Arizona Daily Star. 8:25 in the morning. We got to get back to Tim Bowen. He's running for Oro Valley Town Council. Tim, welcome back, sir.
I'm back. Yes,
we got 3 minutes, and I got two questions for you. Okay. Let's talk about if you think we're generating enough money sales tax wise. Give me one or two places that obviously we're overspending in that we could spend towards other more important things in the budget.
Well, I think the first thing that jumps out is golf and golf infrastructure at the Conquistador courses. I drive by those courses every day, Chris. I was a golfer for 25 years in Southern California. I can recognize a busy golf course, and those courses are empty afternoon. People might play them in the morning, but they're empty in the afternoons. And I think that the money that we're allocating via sales tax currently and any proposal of new infrastructure at these two courses are a very bad direction for Oro Valley. So will you count that as one or two?
That's okay.
That's for two.
That's good. Now, the other question is, The town manager is, her contract up is in October, but this council actually has to make a decision on whether or not to keep her by July 2nd, because there's a 90-day out thing on this. Would you vote to keep Mary Jacobs as the town manager?
Currently, I would. I am someone who attends the meetings regularly. I think that, you know, while I might disagree with Mary on particular policy issues, I think she's a very strong public servant. I think she speaks very well, and she explains her positions very patiently and clearly. I do think that she's an asset for our town, and I would not be in favor of asking her to move on.
Well, I'm not going to get into it, but I totally disagree with that. I don't think the council trusts the information they get from her, and the way she behaved during the golf thing was totally atrocious, and I do not think she represents the town well in public, especially in the region, but we'll have to do that another day. Ed, is this a phone call or not? Let's put him on real quick. Let's get a phone call in for Ralph from Oral Valley for Tim Bowen. And then, Tim, if we run out of time, we'll do this again next month, okay? Tim, we'll do it again next month. Let's get Ralph on the line real quick. Ralph, 30 seconds for a question. Go.
I'll make it quick. I'm hearing not in my backyard from Tim, and I'm curious what his plan is. I hear no new ideas about retail in our Showplace Marketplace. I'm hearing... No new apartments. I hear a lot of no's, but what's the plan? I'll let it go with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ralph. You got about 40 seconds, Tim.
Ralph, the plan is simply this: a town that's thrived for 45 years and not collected property taxes is a town that's thrived by properly managing the sales tax revenues that we have. And I'm not saying no. What I'm saying is the current proposals I'm hearing are not good overall for our town. And I do think that we can properly manage our town for the conceivable future without a property tax, with diligent preparation and diligent management of our existing sales tax revenues.
All right, Tim, thanks for the time. We'll do it again. Check out Bowen, Bohen, number4ov.com. Have a nice day, sir.
You too. Thank you, Chris.
And Alexander, spin us away to the bottom of the hour news. And Alexander, Christy, Simone, and you. Before this hour is over, we got Stephanie Basley coming up. The book's called Buy the Avocado Toast. We'll talk about that in a second. It's not a food book for you foodies. So, and then before it's over, we'll have the... I have Michael Guyman addressing the Board of Soups about the restaurant situation, and I will evaluate whether or not he was helpful, not so helpful, or we'll see. And then I'll tell Tia Gloria before I get there, the whole Martha McSally kerfuffle from yesterday keeps kind of blowing up. But Gloria, I promise I will warn you that you can switch to another station when we get to that. So let's go to Stephanie Bowsley. The book is called Buy the Avocado Toast. Very appropriate as kids are kind of graduating from high school and going to college. It's how to crush student debt, make more money, and live your best life. Stephanie, sorry I gave you a little laugh already. Welcome to Wake Up Tucson.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
So just real quick, I know everyone asked you this question. Explain to everyone why buy the avocado toast for the title of this book about crushing student debt and other things.
Yeah, so it kind of came out of a frustration I had when I was $250,000 in student debt.
Yikes.
Which I was after finishing undergrad and grad school in 2012. So I had my master's degree, but it was kind of the middle of the recession, so there weren't very many jobs. And I started reading all these other financial self-help books and get-out-of-debt books, and they all made me feel like I was a dumb, bad person who made, like, horrible life choices. And it was full of advice, like, never go to Starbucks again and stop spending money on anything that's not, like, an absolute necessity and pick up side gigs to make some extra money. And none of that resonated with me because I was 30 years old. I had so much debt and such a low income that I would have had to do those things for, like, 20 years before I was out of debt. So the idea of like not having a Starbucks until I'm 50 was kind of a downer for me. And it made me...
You need better priorities. You need some good priorities, girl. I can't have a coffee at Starbucks until I'm 50.
I mean, just like all those things of like never enjoy life because you should be punishing yourself all the time to get this debt paid off.
Sure.
I found that really applicable to someone who was like in a few thousand dollars of credit card debt. But someone who is in debt from going to a good school, being at the top of their class, you know, is not quite that same person as the overspender shopping type.
Gotcha.
So I felt like there needed to be a book that just addressed people that had more debt and found that other traditional advice was a little bit, it wouldn't get them where they needed to be fast enough.
So what was your education? What do you have degree? What do you have degrees in?
So I have, my undergraduate degrees are in international business and psychology, and then my graduate degree is in film from NYU, film production.
Now that's some, that'll definitely bump up your student debt as going to NYU film school. Now,
yeah.
So if Stephanie,
tell me about it.
30-year-old Stephanie could talk to 18-year-old Stephanie, go back in the time machine, what would she tell her?
Yeah, so I would probably try to point out that sometimes accumulating that type of debt makes it actually harder for you to do the thing that you went to school for or that you want to do. You know, that advice of like pay a lot of money for a degree that allows you to do the thing you love isn't realistic for everyone because some people's dream jobs just pay a lot more than others.
Right.
So I wish I could have explained to my younger self that, like, hey, part of working in an arts career is a lot of networking and interning and things that are a lot actually easier to do when you're not also trying to pay off, like, a $1,600 student debt bill every month, right? It's very hard to live in cities where the art scene is really thriving and be able to also afford those debt payments. So I think I would have tried to help my younger self see that that I can go to grad school, but it may come at the cost of it actually being harder to make films or harder to work in the industry or live where I need to live. And so if there was a way to get the knowledge and the experience other than paying all this money, I should have been, you know, more interested to at least investigate those further.
So now that you're so what are give me one, or I know I only have you for a limited time, so give me give me the best strategy right now for someone who is staring down a truckload of student debt and they're like, what's a method from By the Avocado Toast that you would recommend?
For people that are with in very high amounts of debt, I find that, especially myself, I was more interested in things that would get me out of debt in a quicker amount of time and still allow me to enjoy life, right? So the first thing I tell people to do is, like, instead of putting your debt bill at the focus, put yourself at the focus and think about not what job do you want, but it's kind of like the overall picture of your life. What things are really valuable to you? Is it important for you to have a wedding, have kids, like live in a warmer place, or maybe have a house cleaner so you don't have to clean your own house every week? Like it's perfectly fine to want all those things. But so for people like me who have more debt and who are really willing to do whatever it takes, I have a whole chapter on working abroad, right? I worked abroad in Singapore for about 9 years. It helped me a lot with my debt because the income tax rate was so much lower. And because I was working and living abroad, I got to write off most of that job's income in foreign earned income. So that just doing my same job, like in Singapore instead of New York, netted me an additional about $30,000 a year just from those tax savings, which were completely legal and a lot of people just don't know about, right? But obviously not everyone who reads my book is going to be able to do that. So I also offer really step-by-step instructions on how to get a mortgage when you have six-figure debt, how to get a new career that you don't have a lot of experience in but maybe has a higher earning potential, and how to navigate that transition, how to quickly improve your bad credit scores, and really how to deal with the self-esteem and self-worth issues that you have as a result of your debt or as a result of your however you're living to get out of debt.
So where are you at? Where are you at now in your student debt?
So I have paid off $138,000.
Okay.
Now, and I still have about $100,000 to go. But I think the main difference is, like, I learned how to live my life in the meantime. Like, I own one property. I used to own two. I've managed to have a relationship. I've managed to publish a book, you know, and I invested in, you know, the tools I needed to accomplish that goal. And so it's all about just, like, being realistic with the kind of life you want, with what you're willing to do to get there, and then kind of, like, also doing the essentials that are necessary for this type of stuff, like, you know, recognizing and reducing your financial self-sabotage, or taking advantage of certain states' incentives to, like, buy land or buy property cheaply. I talk about all those kind of shortcuts in the book as well and give people a lot of information on where they can go if they're interested in pursuing that avenue more.
All right. The book is called Buy the Avocado Toast. It's on Amazon right now and at fine booksellers if they're actually open and you can touch a book. So, Stephanie, good luck with the book.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if anyone wants to learn more about me, my website is youarenotyourdebt.com.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for the nice discussion and good luck in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good one.
All right, that's Stephanie Bowsley. The book is called Buy the Avocado Toast. Tia Gloria, shut off the show. I'm going to talk about Martha McSally when we come back probably. So you can go listen to some Frank Sinatra or some other radio show. There are other radio shows exist. I don't even know that. But wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. At 8:49 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Listener up on the north side, Ryan, about talking about Tim Bowen from Oral Valley. Seriously, it was built by speculators, so that's why once thriving businesses before this one are now dead or dying. Who is this guy? Sheesh. Tim is a very smart guy, as you can tell, but he's definitely a no-growther, is what you can tell. So when Ralph called up and said the not-in-my-backyarder, that's what Tim came off as. And I don't know. I feel like there needs to be a little bit more of a smart balance of all that. We can't play the chamber guy. We're having too many technical issues. Tomorrow will be a rockin' show. We got Mark doing movies between 2000 and 2009, Ted Maxwell, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, the Secretary of the Interior of the Bernhardt of the whole... I'm gonna ask him, Ed, about the Raul Grijalva town hall about... well, people are miserable. He's worried about the some anteaters getting COVID or something
of
like
course,
that.
Of course, yes.
We'll talk about
out
that.
Out in the desert somewhere, yes.
And Food Friday is a place called the Angry Crab Shack, which is what people have called Ed Alexander's office in the past. The Angry Crab Shack.
Love it. It's in my hood. In Pliskin Acres, they're all Angry Crab Shacks. Thank you very much. Yes, they are.
Let's talk about McSally real quick. It happened 24 hours ago exactly, my interview with Martha. So let's go to the old mailbag. We got letters. Here's Bev up on the north side. OMG, how can she refuse? She thinks Trump can pull off the election for her. Thanks for asking the question two times until you got the answer. Noah, who does not dig Martha McSally, said a primary debate is good for the party and whoever wins the primary. No primary debate only helps the astronaut. She says you should have Kelly with an eye on and ask her why she keeps pulling a Jonathan Lyons and not encouraging a primary debate. And my answer to one is, you got to remember, Kelly with an eye cannot stand Christy Simone. When she first became Pima GOP chair being, sorry, Arizona chair being, and I sent her an invite to come on to talk about her vision for the party, we don't even get a response from Kelly with an eye. So again, Kelly with an eye and Martha are very similar sometimes, where they don't like getting some tough questions, sad to say. What was the other thing? And then, of course, Noah followed up with, I think you broke news. I don't think anyone has asked or gotten McSally to say she was refusing primary debates again. I don't know. I wasn't even thinking that it was a breaking news thing. But I guess I'll say it now. You heard it here first, folks. I'd wake up Tucson. Martha McSally refuses any primary debates. Tia Gloria, you better not be listening. Teddy, shut off the radio. Okay. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a, you guys think I'm, some of you think I'm a Daniel McCarthy fan. I'm not that big of a Daniel McCarthy fan. He's an interesting cat himself. I mean, that dude was texting me yesterday morning to ask me, like I'm going to ask questions of Martha for him. I'm not doing that. I mean, I know he's on the other guy's show like 5 days a week. I guess if you need more of that, go for it. But literally, I got a text from Daniel McCarthy at 6:45. And he's talking about the primary, but this is a question I always asked. I've been bringing this up all the time. Let's go to John Holden. He's an LD guy. He's a big LD guy.
Good morning.
John.
And I'm a little on the frustrated side here. I have had to arrange for virtual, Zoom type meetings for our legislative district, and we're having open session for candidates to call in. You get 5 minutes, come in, speak your piece, maybe take a few questions. And I'm hearing nothing from Martha McSally or her staff, despite repeated invitations to join our meeting. Zilch. And I find that real disappointing. You know, whether you like her or not, it would be good to hear from her. She is our official representative, now senator, in Washington, and we're just not getting the feedback that we should be. I'm not certain anybody else is up to the task of taking the job, but it would be nice for the incumbent to have a chance to speak with us.
So think about this, right? Right before COVID happened, she's at the LD11 meeting, right?
Right.
And the guy from the Saddlebrook Republican Club, which is I still think it's the biggest in the state, says to her, hey, why can't you? We've been asking you for the last year or so to come visit us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she went to I'm too busy. I work 10-hour days. So then Merritt, Merritt from Sun City,
sure.
Right? He says, well, do you have anyone who could talk on your behalf? She's like, not really.
Yeah.
Right? And so what are we doing? Here's why I get fired up about her is I know we need to win the seat, right? Not just for Arizona's sake, but for the country's sake,
sure,
and for Supreme Court's sake. And so, John, as a guy who's watched politics, been involved with politics for these many years, Republican politics, I'm going to ask you this question. Aren't we seeing the repeat of the Kristen Sinema from 2 years ago race by Martha McSally?
It's looking very much like 2018 all over again. And there's, you've got to be out there talking to your supporters. You've got to be out there, talking to both sides, because you got to win over the other side as well, whether it's on the primary or the general. But you can't just be making plans for an election that you don't know you're going to be running in.
So we were just talking about with the guy from Tucson, Somali, the Seinfeld where George does the opposite and good things happen.
Right.
That's what Martha needs to do, right? So 2 years ago, you dissed Kelly with the eye and Joe Arpaio's people, and they didn't vote for you. This year, you're going to go diss whoever likes McCarthy. That's a mistake.
Yeah.
Okay? Number two, don't engage with the local LDs and the people who are the base. And and I swear to God, there's some overpaid jerk at her staff saying, well, don't worry about that, Martha. They'll hold their nose and vote for you anyway.
Yeah, not necessarily.
Well, it was proven 2 years ago, you guys.
You're going to have a lot of blank bubbles on that ballot sheet.
So
she's got to get out there and make her points and sell them hard and sell them fast, because it's not that long until the primaries.
John Holden, thank you very much for everything. Say hi to Ann for us, please.
I will do that. Thank you.
Have a great day, sir. He's also our Pliskin Acres Public Works Director.
Yeah. We'll fill that hole someday.
I did. You know, I got to ask you. Hold on, before you go, I got to ask you because you're Public Works and Pliskin Acres. So my wife and I were driving to my mechanic on Romero Desert Auto. Okay.
Sure.
We're doing La Cañada, flowing wells, making a right on Roger.
Yeah.
Do you know where I'm going with this question?
You bet.
Where am I going? Almighty Karnak. Holdak, I'm going to call you. Holdak.
Yeah,
where am I going?
You're going to drive down Roger Road, and then all of a sudden you get this one stretch that looks beautiful. Wait a minute. That's Sharon's district.
But here's the thing.
Yeah,
so check this out.
The rest of it is still crap.
So we make the right to go west on Roger, right?
Okay.
It's beautiful for 100 feet. Then it's crappy for another 300 feet. Then it gets better again for a stretch as we get to Romero, and then Romero is Kandahar, Afghanistan.
Right. You can tell where the city limit is. It's one of these things I've never seen anybody do a zigzag better than the city and the county through this neighborhood.
So check this out. What they're doing, it's an election year, right?
So
what they're doing is you just do either side 100 yards of the main street, and you go, oh, look at that. Sharon's getting it done, right?
Yeah.
But if you drive 102 feet, it goes back to Kandahar.
Exactly. And this is Chuck's old neighborhood. No, you know, that's the impressive thing about this. They managed to ignore that since Chuck was in high school here.
Flowing Wells was too small to hold a power like me, John Holden.
Yeah.
That's okay. Give Sharon another 20 years. She'll go to the other side of the street.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. The other side of the street's Paul Durham.
Ugh.
Forget about it.
Your answer to that, you know.
Woo! That's my rock and a hard place there. All right, sir. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
My last thing on this Martha thing. Some of you take this. It's when I bring this stuff up. Somehow I hate her, or even I think she's a crappy senator. Actually, she might be a good senator, and her votes are right where they need to be. I need her to win. That's what you guys don't get. There's candidate McSally and there's public servant McSally. And public servant McSally might be pretty good. But you know something? Candidate McSally, if she keeps making the same mistakes, what's that old line? If you keep repeating the same mistakes over again, expecting a different result, that's called insanity, Albert Einstein, right? That's what I'm worried about. All right, Tia Glory, you can come back on the show now. I mean, listen to the show. Zach is coming up next. He's got our good friend Fernando Gonzalez, who's running for the vacated, well, by Richard Leas is dying, his seat. He'll either face a Adelita Grijalva, actually, or a Consuelo Hernandez in that race.
And Ramon Valdez, I believe.
That's different. That's Ramon is running against Matt Hines.
No, but on the show today.
Oh, really?
I believe at 9. Right around the corner.
It's good to see radars on there. Fortune cookie radar, as we like to call them. So Ekstrom called them radar. I just add the fortune cookie because of his whatever. Wake up.
Always look on the light side of life.